Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast Supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hello and welcome back to the Thistle Scottish Rugby Podcast Breakfast Edition before the Calcutta Cup. It is 7:30 in the morning, lads. How are we feeling?
I'm struggling.
I'm really tired. Matt?
I'm all right, actually.
You feeling good?
I had a little McDonald's breakfast before we came here.
Did you?
Yeah, I got here early. It was an absolute dream. I haven't had one in a while.
What would you have?
Sausage McMuffin and hash browns.
Ooh.
A little coffee.
Ooh.
But the big, large Diet Coke.
It is an option. I was quite surprised.
It's part of the meal deal.
Well, that is the perfect breakfast to get yourself ready for the squad announcement, which we're going to miss again, but we already know the team. So that's in about 5 hours' time. This is Thursday morning.
We're 99% sure we know the team.
I've got three sources telling me the team.
Chucking at you.
We've got three.
I think we just trust a secret source as well.
The super secret source has never
unblemished
led us
track record.
Exactly, yeah.
It's kind of got the peak super source, and then there's kind of like two sort of like minor sources coming in, corroborating.
And then we've been lots in between.
We've been digging for the sources, and they're excellently hidden.
Yeah.
Like, absolutely bizarre.
So yeah, it's very, very good. We're going to go and chat a little bit about the Ireland game last weekend, and of course look ahead to the Calcutta Cup on Saturday afternoon. As ever, you are speaking to us on Twitter at Thistle Rugby Pod, on Instagram Thistle_Rugby_Pod, and there was a few folk bringing their emotions to the mailbag this week, thistlerugby@gmail.com. But first things first, there have been a few bits of news on the Scottish Rugby Parish notice board. Let's have a look. Sean Wayne, high performance coach, if you believe it, has left the SRU to go and become England Rugby League head coach. Matt, list me Sean Wayne's top three achievements at the SRU.
He was hired.
Getting hired was good
he
for
got
him.
Got the
yeah.
job. He had a write up in BBC Sport once, I think.
Did he?
Maybe.
Might have done.
And then he left. I mean, that's genuinely the only things I can think of that have his name to them.
Project Zeus?
It is.
I mean, I think it's quite clear, even like the sort of like quite seasoned Scottish rugby hacks were all like, I've never seen him at Murrayfield. I don't know what he does.
I think the point is, if he has done stuff, then the SRU have done a terrible job of communicating what he's done.
Yeah. But which isn't beyond the realms of possibility. Yeah,
no. But the SRU love spinning sort of any tiny bit of positive news in their favour. And the fact they haven't managed to find anything on Sean Wayne.
I have a theory.
What's that?
You know how at Saracens, like, the players' wives get paid money?
Yeah.
Allegedly.
Yeah.
I reckon Sean Wayne is another bit of Mark Dodson's wage.
Oh, really?
They're just, like, they're spreading it out. I think Dodson's, like, had to divert more of his cash to Sean Wayne.
But then, I mean, talk about you know, failing upwards. If we don't think he's done that much, like England rugby league coach, pretty big gig, right?
Is there a better place to fail upwards? Look at Scott Johnson.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, that true. Is true. There you go.
It seems an odd one. I mean, I actually think increasingly being like the England rugby league head coach isn't that big a deal, because rugby league internationally is not as good as the club game.
I agree. Yeah, I agree. You know, I think
particularly the Super League.
I sort of remember from like 15 years ago when you had like Brian Noble as coach. That was kind of like that was like peak.
Yeah, like Sean Long and like Farrell and Peacock exactly. And stuff.
But I mean, for him, he's like an absolute Wigan ultra. Like being England rugby league
makes
coach
a lot more sense.
Is a massive job for him.
Yeah.
So good luck, Sean. We hardly knew ye. Edinburgh have made a short-term loan signing from Exeter. Young chap called Stan South, I believe.
Outstanding.
Hmm? Oh, outstanding. Is that the Edinburgh pun?
They already
machine?
Made that pun. Don't know anything about him, but I think that Murray Douglas has gone back to Super Rugby now. His loan's over, so.
Yeah. And then I think, so what, is he back to Brumbies?
I think so.
And then I think Hamilton Burr is in like the wider Hurricane squad.
Yeah, I've seen that.
Yeah, he is. Yeah, after playing very well for Waikato. I mean, I get like replacing someone and having the cover, but would it not have been a really good chance to say, you know, we've had half of the Super Six season gone. Who are the standouts, you know, playing in that tournament?
Yeah.
It's going to be a cheaper option.
Yeah, someone like Hodgson has been playing Super Six a lot of the year. So.
I mean, I think he's still on Edinburgh's books as like
elite development. He got a lot of caps last year.
Yeah. It just seems that there must be other players in that. I guess who the they got.
Hodgson, even with Carmichael.
Fraser McKenzie.
Julius Gilchrist. Yeah. Sam Thompson, I think, can play in the row as well.
So, yeah. You know, like, there is enough people there.
Kunavulu, is he second row or is he a six?
I'm kind of thinking he sounds like he might be a disaster.
He's been playing a lot of Super Six.
A lot of Super Six.
So is that guy, Dakota, the hooker that Glasgow signed?
Yeah.
Playing like just for Boroughmuir.
Yeah. The guy that came through, he was the second tier of Aussie rugby, wasn't he? Or third?
No, that's the Jally something.
Oh, yeah.
Who hasn't been seen, I don't think. Not even in Super Six.
Yeah.
Or he might have played for Stirling County, actually.
Anyway, well, Stan South comes north.
But literally, I don't think anyone knows.
No.
No.
Anything about him, so. But, you know, let's see.
Let's see. And Charlie Sheil signed a new contract with Edinburgh this week. We were talking at the weekend, Matt, that we thought Charlie Sheil is somebody that we want to see coming through for Scotland.
How bad the stag was that you were chatting about. How much you want to see Charlie Sheil come through.
Mate, we were grasping at any straw we could.
The strangest stag weekend on the outskirts of Bordeaux. Where we ended up watching the game in literally a bookies.
Nice.
They looked really surprised to see any people there. We basically gave them like a month's takings.
Yeah, they were sort of like illegally streaming stuff onto this big TV.
Yeah,
and stuff like that.
They were streaming it.
So eventually the TV
streamed. No Canal Plus.
Eventually their TV like lost, couldn't keep pace with the game. So we were just streaming it on 4G on my phone. I've used up all my data for the month. Yeah,
they were very, very apologetic, to be fair.
Yeah, they were. And, you know, little pints of Heineken. Lovely.
Yeah.
A wonderful time to
be alive. A lovely, lovely time. I suppose the only other bit of news is Finn Russell, not included in the Scotland squad again, remains in exile. Keeping his head down a little bit, though. We haven't seen him much on social media or anything like that. Little bits of chat is that there is a line of communication open between Gregor and Finn, but no involvement in the Calcutta Cup.
And it was relatively vague, kind of what level and type of communication is as well. Like,
I think it was telling that it was Steve Tandy was delivering the message that there was a line of communication, but he didn't really know anything about it.
Yeah, I think
it was within the context of sort of like the Ireland debrief rather than a sort of specific.
It could just be Finn sending like pictures of himself to Gregor, like swearing at the camera.
Technically a dialogue.
That is a dialogue.
But I also think the fact there's lines of communication, that doesn't even mean they're sending messages. That just means Gregor's got Finn's number.
That's
it's open.
The channel
is open.
The channel is open.
He's online on WhatsApp.
But there's been a few kind of like little things floating around. I don't know if you saw Simon Zeebo reposted this Instagram video.
Yeah.
Which is pretty funny. Finn Russell's face on John Cena.
Yeah. Yeah, John Cena arriving at the Royal Rumble.
Yeah. And then was it Tooney on Triple H?
Yeah.
Oh, so.
Well, there's that. And then Gregor Townsend 2 nights ago retweeting a message from Jade Conkle saying that there's only two settings, committed or not.
Yeah. Yes.
And it's like the first bit of activity for Gregor Townsend in ages. He's just like, I'm going to do this.
Yeah.
I would like to give him the benefit of the doubt and think it was just he saw something and in that moment retweeted, but if not, I mean, it just adds to like how a bit pathetic this whole thing's been.
Well, I think, yeah, if Gregor Townsend doesn't know what he's doing, or at least the connotations that people might draw from doing that, he is very thick. Like, it's been the biggest story of his like rugby career.
Yeah.
And he's right in the heat of it. He's just like, I'll just go check in on Twitter. What could I do?
Yeah. It was interesting. I know Tom English appears to obviously be quite well in with the camp. And he did tweet something which was, Finn Russell isn't coming back until he apologizes. And I don't think he's in the mood to apologize. Right.
Well, what was it? Super secret source said that Finn had said he can't think of anything worse than coming back to the Scotland camp.
Yeah. That was true.
So
we still don't know exactly what's going on, but it doesn't sound good.
It doesn't sound great, but hope for the middle 2 week period of the Six Nations. I think even if Finn had apologized, I do think bringing him back would have been really, really disruptive ahead of this Calcutta Cup game.
Particularly after, I reckon there's a pretty good feeling in the camp actually.
Yeah. I think a good performance. I think it would undermine Adam Hastings after a decent shift in Dublin on Saturday as well. So should we head straight in to talk about the Ireland game?
Yes.
Obviously, Scotland going down in the end, 19-12. Penalties from Hastings, all of the points. And that man, Johnny Sexton, with all the points for Ireland. General feeling to start off this conversation, a pretty decent day at the office, but ultimately extremely frustrating that we couldn't get it over the line.
Yeah, I mean, I guess so. I think it's quite interesting, like John Barclay was saying, like, I think that they find nothing worse than being called the valiant loser.
Mm.
And whilst Scotland did play well, especially in patches, again, they are the valiant loser. And obviously, it was a better performance than they had against Japan and Ireland in the World Cup. But ultimately, this team, I imagine, would rather play shit and win than play well
definitely.
And lose. And so ultimately, I know it does matter, but I think it's just frustration again is the main kind of feeling, because the game was definitely there to be won. I think maybe we disagree a little bit. I thought Scotland were marginally the better team overall on the day. I think there were some key areas where Scotland both underperformed and Ireland were better than Scotland that kind of just changed the tide a little bit.
What, you think Ireland were the better team?
No, I think Scotland were marginally the better team.
Mm. In many ways, it was a pretty scrappy game. Like, apart from maybe that first like 5 minutes, and then in lead up to Ireland's try, I don't think either team managed to sort of exert like any particular control on it. And it was a pretty sort of topsy turvy, like seesaw. So it's kind of hard to But I think the difference was that when Ireland had chances, they executed on pretty much every single one. Like, yes. I think Sexton missed one kick, but apart from that, like when they got into the 22 or in the sort of scoring area, they came away with points. So on that level, I'd say they played better. I think the major positive is that, unlike in the World Cup and unlike in the Six Nations in the past few seasons, in away matches, it was like far closer than it has been.
Yes.
And I think the fact that Scotland fronted up physically and were in the contest the whole time and didn't make life easy for their opponents was like a pretty big swing from the last two seasons. I think that you say that Scotland front five probably outplayed the Ireland front five.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's an Ireland front five that is like sort of beaten New Zealand twice in recent years and is sort of being consistently excellent.
Interesting that it was Josh van der Vlier came out and said, and obviously there's like a recency bias with this, right? But he did say that he thought it was the hardest game he's played for
Ireland.
I think
Omani said the similar thing, that it was like an absolute like battlefield out there.
And, you know, again, you've got one guy, I mean, van der Vlier started against the All Blacks when they won. When they won in Ireland, and obviously O'Mahony's played like Lions, right?
Yeah.
Have you got the stats from the entries into the 22?
Yeah, from Kevin Miller. Let me just get these up. So I think Scotland made 11 entries into the...
That's actually too upsetting.
Well, I guess get context. I think...
Here it is. 11. They made 11 entries to the Ireland 22, and the outcomes were as follows. 1, ruck penalty conceded. 2, penalty scored, 3 points. 3, knock on. 4, ruck penalty conceded. 5, ruck turnover conceded. 6, ruck penalty conceded. 7, interception. 8, chip kick not recovered. 9, ball dropped over the line. 10, ruck penalty conceded. 11, knock on. So, yeah. And for comparison, Ireland's entries into the Scotland 22, 1, try scored, 7 points. 2, penalty conceded. 3, interception. 4, penalty scored. 5, penalty scored. 6, mall turnover conceded. So obviously not that, still not amazing, but they're converting time into points. And that's Kevin Miller at Top of the Moon. Thanks for those.
Do you think that issue to convert, because as you said, we were able to make yards, you know, between kind of the 22 and the 22.
Yeah.
We were able to make yards. Do you think that was a game management issue, that once you got into the 22, Price and Hastings weren't managing the game correctly? Or do you think it was a kind of full team issue?
I think it's a bit of both. I think that there were a few moments when you could see Hastings was screaming for the ball to come from Price when they you know, they'd done a few pick and goes, sucked in some defenders, but then it was kept in tight. I mean, it did feel as if Scotland was sort of like banging their heads against a brick wall, but I kind of feel that when you're in the 22 and that close, it's not actually the worst tactic. It's just the the execution wasn't great, and particularly the breakdown were sort of going in singles rather than ones, rather than twos or threes.
Yeah, and I think that's the two issues on execution. One is just getting isolated at ruck time, because there was a couple of times where I think it was Van der Flier and Stander got the turnovers, where literally the moment the player had picked up the ball, you were like, you knew that
it
was probably going to be a turnover because they'd already gone without someone and the rest of the forwards weren't aware of what was happening. And then also, as you look at how damaging like Scott Cummings and even someone like Roy Sutherland can be when they're coming from depth and coming on the ball at pace. Mm. And I just think the forwards, I know pick and goes is not really the same thing, but when they're kind of off the side of a ruck, they're standing very flat and very close.
Yeah.
And just... Ireland can just kind of deal with that.
Yeah, I suppose they don't have that sort of bulk.
Yeah.
I mean, I think as well, the referee didn't really help, but when you go back and look at those penalties, like probably most of them were...
I think most of them
fair
were...
Fair enough.
I think a little bit of inconsistency around offsides at ruck time and things like that, particularly when they were right on that 5-meter line and you see that one that Ben Kay was posting.
Yeah.
Where the guy's told to get onside and then just didn't. Bundyaki, isn't it?
Yeah.
And he just doesn't. And that's quite frustrating, particularly in those sort of real red zone moments. But I don't think Scotland can really blame the referee for the grand scheme of the performance. Should we talk a little bit about... Well, actually, first, I've got a few three-word reviews, which we did on Twitter, some quite funny ones. Craig Taylor, a lot of positives. Jonathan Sharp, same old stuff. Bob Carmey, Nick fucking Haining. This is 3-word review. Bruce McConaughey, same old shite. Fraser Matheson, better, but shite. Ian Wallace, coulda, shoulda, woulda. And Dermot Gormley, nearly good enough. And how about this one? Richard Gray, not that one. Just fall over. So should we talk about the hog drop over the line? It's a 1-in-a-million freak, surely.
I mean, he will have never done that before in his career and will never do it again.
Yeah.
It just happens. It feels like if that's going to happen to any international team, it's going to be Scotland. There is a curse. Murrayfield has been built on an ancient Indian burial ground. There's something in the water.
We're not allowed any joy. No. Like once every 20 years, we're allowed a little bit of joy. Yeah. And that's it.
Things are only going to get worse as well. We've put the first spade in on the new mini Murrayfield.
Yeah.
The Indians are sour.
Yeah, they're really upset.
That was their one bit of remaining land in Scotland. It's like they built a small stadium on it. Yeah, I mean, I thought actually John Barclay put it a good way, that didn't cost the team 7 points. It cost them like four, maybe even two.
Yeah.
I do think that that is a good way of looking at it, particularly if you're speaking to Stuart Hogg after the event.
Well, yeah.
I think in reality, that try goes over as 13-all. 20 minutes. Yes. 20 minutes to go. You talk about momentum shifting hugely.
And I think we were saying beforehand that if you can build a lead against a team like Ireland, they're not used to chasing a game.
Yeah.
They're very good at closing out games and they're pretty clinical. Yeah. As I said, I don't think he'll ever do it again. And he'll know if he gets the opportunity that he'll... And I think he'll just flop over the line. And I think with Stuart Hogg, like, that sort of thing just spurs him on rather than something that will like make him go back.
Get money on Hoggy for a brace this weekend.
And I felt if we sort of talk, I thought Stuart Hogg played very well overall.
I thought he had one of his better games in a while.
I don't know the impact of his captaincy, but I think in terms of the fronting up and like the passion, which Rory Lawson talks about this week, is like the minimum standard was there. Maybe he was driving it. The only thing I would say is going back to referee that it seems as if there were like a few moments where they needed a bit more clarity or there were things that maybe could have even been referred to the TMO. Like they may be marginal, but there's a carry of James Ryan running into, I think it's Hamish Watson.
His
elbow right in the face. And I don't know, maybe if you've got someone closer to it, like Barkley, for example, who has been captain, you have a word. And even when...
I think, do you think that would be a red card if they'd reviewed it?
Maybe a yellow.
I think minimum yellow. It could be a
red. Like,
I don't think it should be a red, but I can see how it could end
up. As a Scotland fan, I don't care. Yeah. I want to see a red. And then even when Sam Johnson gave away that absolute dumb play penalty off the kick. But then Hastings catches it.
And gets absolutely filled
calls in. Calls the mark, gets absolutely smashed way late. And I think that if you'd said to Mathieu Reynal, who... I couldn't stand by the end of it. Fucking him. But if you said to him, like, can you have a look at that, please? You're potentially reversing the penalty.
Yeah, yeah.
And maybe because Hogg's removed, there isn't experience enough to sort of come and have a word. You maybe missed that.
Yeah, I think that's fair. Do you want to talk a little bit about positives and then we can look ahead to...
One thing I want to say about Hogg is because obviously Botti did that kick at the weekend.
Yeah.
Where's like the proper big Hogg spiral gone?
He might try it this week.
He's doing a few kicks, but you remember like the old Hogg, like 70-80 meter. Yeah, yeah. He's done one for Exeter this year,
but yeah, against La Rochelle.
He's just not really connecting with them. Yeah, because he had one where it kind of like dribbled a little, didn't go too far, and just seeing the Botti kick of the weekend, I was like, I missed that man. Positives.
Well, positives. I think the two big positional talking points last week: Rory Sutherland coming in. And Nick Haining, both, I mean, Rory Sutherland in particular had a phenomenal game, I thought. I thought Nick Haining was excellent for the first 40 to 50 minutes and then maybe tailed off a little bit. But
Nick Haining put everything out there in the first 40.
Yeah.
Literally,
he was amazing.
10 years of professional rugby, playing winger for Western Force.
Yeah.
Like, he is...
Fair enough.
Yeah. And then, Rory Sutherland. I mean,
had Furlong where the hell did
that
toast.
Come from?
Our scrum looked unbelievably great. Solid.
Yeah.
He was good in the loose. Ferguson was very good. Oh, Xander Ferguson was great. Well.
I thought Fraser Brown had a good game as well. A little bit ropey arrows as ever.
I think Haining is a tricky one because I think he did like a really good job as like an overall forward, but it was almost like he was playing as another flanker. Like I think that he did a few carries, but that carrying game, which he was presumably brought in for, I don't think came to the fore. Maybe it's just the nature of the game.
No, I think you're right.
So that's why I think people are getting a bit angry about Haining, you know, probably going to be dropped this week for Bradbury.
Yeah.
But I think overall, like, Bradbury is a better carrier.
And it's not reflective of performance, it's reflective of the balance that's needed.
Yeah, exactly.
I also think it's reflective of where the squad is in Townsend's mind. I think if you read all the announcements and things when the team was put out last week, they went pretty much out of their way to say Bradbury would have been starting had he not picked up this nickel.
Yeah.
Because it was like Nick Haining makes his debut sort of immediately after it's, you know, Magnus Bradbury misses out with a thigh strain.
Yeah.
They don't do that if it was going to be the other way around. So I think it's not a surprise to see Bradbury coming in for a number of reasons. And I think what it has proven is that you get Bradbury out there for 60 minutes, doing what he does. And then you get, if you can get 20 minutes of peak Nick Haining off the bench, that's actually a really great a great option for Scott.
Which is nice that, although he's only played once, like it's a small sample, like to be able to have another guy who's maybe, you know, second, third behind Bradbury competing with Ferguson, it's really good.
I guess the problem with it all is it's really strange that he's going to go back to Edinburgh and still be like third choice.
Yeah.
Same with like Rory Sutherland. Like, he's going to go back and just be like,
be on the bench.
Not interested in game time, lads.
Yeah. But maybe he just maybe he doesn't need it though. Maybe he just needs to rotate, have a bit of game time occasionally. And I thought one of the rewatched first half last night, and our attack in the first 5 sort of 10 minutes was like absolutely outstanding. I think managed to get it out into the wide channel.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like, a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Really well. The tight five forwards are carrying, offloading as well. Even Johnny Gray did an offload.
Johnny Gray did a really nice offload.
Cummings looked really, really good overall. Coming on, as you were saying, coming onto the ball on pace.
I think Cummings and Gray is a really good second row partnership. Yeah. They're nice foils for one another, offering slightly different things.
And it just seems as if sort of that fastest brand of rugby, or whatever you want to call it, was they were at least trying to go for it. And there were like a lot of offloads.
Totally.
Keeping the ball alive. And as a result, it wasn't just aimless. And as a result, Ireland were a bit all over the shop. Sixes and sevens in defence. It just fell apart at the breakdown.
I think one area which we did talk about again on this amazing stag do was that lack of sort of strike plays in key moments, where we've got lineouts or scrums in the 22, or in great attacking positions. And it seemed on Saturday, it was sort of Sam Johnson was just like trucking it up.
There was two instances. There was one where scrum in the 22. And you've sort of got like Kinghorn coming in from behind. You've got Maitland as well. It seems to be an option. You've got Jones there, Hogg. And you're like, right, okay, put one of these guys in a one-on-one or put them in a gap. Yeah. And they did a straight ball to Johnson and he carried it into the defense. Another time, scrum on about maybe in between the halfway and the 10 in the Ireland half. Got all these players lined up. Looks as if something's going to happen straight up the guts. And I get that you have to sort of form a platform, you know, you've got these amazing, like that back line has got amazing strike players in it. Sort of, it feels like Scotland needs to get them involved a bit more.
I guess I wouldn't have minded it if it felt like it was kind of, you know, a three or four phase, almost like strike
plan.
Move.
Yeah.
So you got Sam, because I don't mind Sam Johnson hitting up there but then it's kind of like, right, what's, maybe it's then a pot of forwards come around and then you hit a strike move on the blind side or something like that. Yeah. But nothing like that really ever seemed to kind of come to fruition.
Yeah.
Thoughts on Sam Johnson's performance? I know I was sandbagging him a little bit pre.
I know you were. I thought apart from the penalty he gave away, he was very good.
Do you think when he's running, it kind of looks like he's running through mud?
Well, when he made that interception, I was like, oh, we're on. And then I was like, oh, actually, he's not very quick.
Yeah, I know.
Something about the long sleeve shirt he wears under his top that I think looks really weird.
Yeah.
Probably slowing him down as well.
Well, maybe. I don't think he does it. He doesn't wear one for Glasgow, I don't think.
I think he does.
Does he? What colour?
White.
Irrelevant.
Take your word for it.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Well, then you kind of obviously had him and Hugh Jones. Jones kind of getting a bit of stick for missing tackles.
There was
the one on Jordan Lahmer.
On Jordan Lahmer where he got done on the outside. And you think he just could have looked like he at least chuck a bit of body in the way of that.
Yeah.
I'm not saying it's easy to tackle Jordan Lahmer because I imagine it's very difficult. But he wasn't very far away from him when he went round him.
Mm. Yeah.
I feel there were glimpses of Jones, though.
Yeah, I actually thought he had a decent game.
When he got intercepted by Lama, that was actually a really nice piece of play.
Yeah.
And I actually think it was the right percentage.
I agree.
To do. Like, obviously, it got intercepted by Lama. It's not the right outcome. But Lama is like half a foot back or just doesn't react quick enough. That is try time.
Yeah, exactly.
So I think and yeah, there was a few other moments like that where Jones was just either just getting on the outside or just managing to kind of get an offload away and actually looked really, really sharp.
Yeah.
And I think potentially been even just a slightly more open game, you would have seen him doing a lot more. Yeah.
Do you think we would have won the game had Finn Russell been playing?
I'm not sure we lost it because Finn wasn't playing.
Mm.
But if you think about what can Finn do and unlock stuff in that 5 meter channel, like the 5 meters when we're just banging down the door, has he got more X factor than Adam Hastings to potentially unlock something? Yes. But that, I guess that's such a hypothetical that I don't feel that, I don't feel so much that I can say yes.
Well, I guess interesting, you talk of that moment when Adam Hastings is shouting at Price in the forwards to give him the ball because he thinks he's on, and they decide obviously not to.
Yeah.
Would that have happened if Finn was playing 10?
Right, would exactly. Pricey have chucked it to Finn? Yeah.
Definitely.
It's interesting because I think you're right, like not converting those chances in the 22 is the reason they lost the game.
Mm.
Had enough chances to get more than 19 points.
Yeah.
I think Finn Russell potentially makes it, it's not black and white, is it? So Finn Russell probably makes it potentially more likely that you convert those chances.
Yeah. I think there's just a sort of broader point of like his experience in that sort of match.
Yeah.
It just seemed like a few points that Scotland sort of lost their head slightly, like the Sam Johnson penalty, for instance. I'm not saying that Finn could have, you know, prevented that, but I think he if he was there, he might have sort of exerted a bit more calm over the group.
Yeah, I think so. I
mean, when Ali Price did that aimless box kick,
I don't know.
I just can't see him doing that if you've got Finn.
I mean, it's so difficult to think. What did Ali Price see in that moment where he thought somebody's charging in to chuck it over the back?
But it was
a deeply frustrating moment in the Tabac. outside of Bordeaux, I think. Just
immediately bought a pack of Marlboro Reds.
That's when we turned the locals against us.
We did smash a pint glass in our excitement.
We did smash a pint glass.
Yeah.
Was it Robbie or you?
Robbie. You banged the table and his pint glass fell and smashed
it. Why do you love pissing off French people? You did it in Toulon as well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, should we look ahead to the Calcutta Cup game Saturday afternoon?
Just one quick thing.
Go on then.
Potentially, I guess just looking at Steve Tandy and Pieter de Villiers.
Mm.
I mean, talk about someone coming in, focusing on the scrum completely for 2 or 3 weeks and
revolutionising it.
Got to be the best kind of squad.
Yeah. I think there was a couple of opportunities where we should have had penalties when the scrum was marching forward. And I guess they managed to get it to the number 8's feet quick enough, but...
Yeah,
I thought there was a couple of moments where we could have had even more from the scrum.
Mm.
It's interesting. It kind of sounds like Pieter de Villiers has come in and seen Rory Sutherland, and he's like, guys, really, really good. Like,
it's an absolute animal.
Why are you starting Gordy Reid? I don't understand what's going on. Like, this guy will kill Tag Furlong. He plays, absolute kills it. Because I always think Rory Sutherland's been pretty, you know, dynamic and in the loose.
Yeah, He has been injured for ages.
But he hasn't played for, 3.5 years for Scotland? Hasn't been in the
summer tour 2016, I think, was his last caps.
Yeah.
Really?
So, like, we've been crying out for a loose head. Like,
to be fair, that correlates pretty nicely with the time we've been doing this podcast. So Rory Sutherland has been missing the whole time we've been in existence.
And then it kind of, you know, a lot of the feedback on Steve Tandy has been that he's kind of, so even some of it's been like simplifying the defensive structure.
Yeah.
And it kind of sounds like people are quite bought into what he's trying to do from a defensive standpoint.
I mean, I don't think Ireland played that well, but apart from Sexton's try, which is, I thought, a pretty nice play off Healy, they didn't look like scoring.
Yes.
No.
And I think they broke down the defense a couple of times, but it was more sort of like Lama making a sort of individual break rather than a sort of Ireland's attack causing us
and it was a nicely worked for their try, to be fair. I think what I got most kick out of the defence is there was really individual dominant hits. It felt like for the first time Scotland were playing that when Ireland ran at us, there was times when they were being pushed back. It really felt that there was an awful lot more aggression in the way in which we were going into those tackles
and
rather than just making them.
Which
I thought was really, really positive.
And I thought Maul defence...
Yeah, very good.
Yeah. And it was interesting. Jamie Ritchie is very good at like timing that kind of getting in
the swimming.
The swimming kind of thing and getting in the way.
Yeah.
And, you know, historically, you would have just assumed that Ireland would have trucked at least one of those moles over. And they didn't really seem to have the better of Scotland.
One thing before we move on to to England.
Oh, man, we've got to go to work.
Johnny Sexton. What do we make of that?
I think he made an absolute meal of it. I do think there's some contact to his face or head.
The video that was doing the rounds was selectively edited.
Doing the rounds, and we put it up.
Not edited by us.
Not edited by us. It was very selectively edited. Yeah. And when we put it up, we were like 6 pints deep in the tobacco. And we were like, right, we really want to spread some hate for Johnny Sexton here, which we reflected upon and didn't think it was quite right. But I think
Ireland fans coming at us. It was like, ah.
Yeah, it was when we got
Ireland
to like
fans are savage.
When we got to like 2,000 likes and like 500 retweets, and it was just like my phone was just like constant aggression from Irish people. I was like, I think we can maybe just stop this now. And then even then, they were like, "Why'd you take that down? Why have you not apologized to Johnny?" And I was like,
"Cowboys,
leave us alone."
Yeah, we kept getting called cowboys.
I mean, you can't tell, can you? Because I suppose Johnny Sexton could have got like smashed in the jaw, but all he's thinking about at the moment is getting up off the deck or securing the ball. Yeah. And then he sits up and he's like, bloody hell, that hurt. Did you see in the top 14 the weekend, Dumeru, you know, the La Rochelle 13?
Yeah.
He was like grabbing on someone in the ruck against Montpellier. And you know, you sort of that where like people hit people's hands off and it's not a punch, just like getting them on the arm. And then he held his face. And the ref had a word with him, and he's had a 5-week ban on the back of it. €1,000 fine.
Really?
Yeah.
That €1,000 fine is going to hit him hard.
Yeah, that's not a touch of size. So what I'm saying is,
Johnny Sexton should have a 5-week ban.
5-week ban, and
I agree.
$10,000 fine.
That's $10,000 fine. Yeah, exactly. I think that'd be fine.
That's fair.
Good. Yeah. Well, the war of the words has started. It is Calcutta Cup week. Sam Johnson says, "We hate England." Lewis Ludlam's fired back this morning saying, "We hate you too." It's getting very, very childish.
Eddie Jones like saying that Scotland are niggly.
Niggly.
And goody.
And kind of, it kind of reminds me of that guy in Edinburgh Airport who said he hated Iceland.
There's got to be a little like video meme in that.
Yeah. So Scotland, England, I think 4:45 on Saturday afternoon. As we understand it, the only change to the Scotland starting 15 is going to be Magnus Bradbury coming in place of Nick Haining. Nick Haining dropping to the bench in place of Cornell Dupree. Happy with that?
As I said, I am. I don't really have an issue with it. And I think across the rest of the team, I don't think make any changes.
Yeah, I mean, there's absolutely no way you can change any of that front five.
No. I think someone said that Bergen's going to come on the bench instead of Nell.
Which is funny because Bergen was on the bench last week in front of Nell. So.
No, but switched right just before the game.
Oh, did it?
Yeah,
so Bergen dropped and Nell came on the bench.
I didn't notice that from the tobacco.
Were the tobacco not talking about
the tobacco were not. The French pundits were not talking about the last minute switch.
Bergen has been dropped.
Which I suppose it makes sense if you want guys that can play that sort of all action.
Yeah, because style. I think as we said when the team was announced last week, you either start Nell for his scrummaging or you drop him all the way because he's not bringing much off the bench. Particularly as the Scotland scrums performed so well that maybe that comfort blanket of having Nell thinking he can come on and solve it up, we actually don't need it.
Mm. And then England, Anthony Watson's still out.
Anthony Watson.
Charlie Yule's been completely kicked out of the squad.
Yeah, savage.
Charlie Yule's is terrible. Gone. Manu is out.
Launchbury back in.
Launchbury back in, which is first, scored against us last year.
Replacement.
It was interesting because was it you, Matt, who said, "Oh, not that worried about Ford, Farrell, Joseph." And then we remembered that that was the 10-12-13 that beat us, like, yeah, 60,
Joseph scored a hat-trick.
62-21.
Jonathan Joseph, like, made absolute mincemeat of Hugh Jones that day.
Yeah.
It was Hugh Jones and Alex Dunbar, and they just, I don't know if they weren't talking, but that just seemed the most...
But then I think it was the same... I actually can't remember what the midfield would have been at Murrayfield 2 years ago. I think it was Joseph.
I think it was... It was Joseph.
It was definitely
and obviously
Joseph,
it was Jones at 13. Potentially, I think it might have been Horn at 12.
It was.
Yeah, no, I'm thinking for England, rather.
Yeah. No, it would have been Ford Farrell, Joseph.
Was it?
Yeah.
Okay. England obviously coming off the back of a loss to a pretty impressive French team, to be honest. Mm. And lots of talk about their lack of ball carriers, particularly now shorn of Manu, and obviously we knew Billy wasn't going to be there anyway.
Oh, but Mako's back on the squad.
Mako's coming back in, which does give them a little bit of that go forward. How are you feeling ahead of Saturday? Do you think Scotland have got a chance?
It's worryingly the most optimistic I've been before a Calcutta Cup match in quite a while.
Yeah.
I mean, I think even before that victory in Murrayfield 2 years ago, I think we'd just come off the back of a Welsh defeat?
Yes.
I think so. And I remember at the time...
We did lose to Wales horrifically. Yeah.
I remember at the time... I think it was, because I remember at the time everyone was going on about how poorly Finn Russell was playing and whether he was a bit of a liability. But I think that off the back of... Scotland coming off the back of that Ireland close defeat, I still think they will be gutted that they lost so narrowly, but pretty optimistic with how they fronted up. To like a physical big Irish team. And I also think that I know it's only one game for England and they have just come off the back of the World Cup final, but I think they're slightly in trouble. I think without Vunipola, chucking in Curry is a mad experiment. And I think that there's been this like realization in the press this week in particular that if you can front up against England, stop them getting over the gain line, they can't find a way past you. Because Owen Farrell's not going to get over the gain line. Joseph, if he's not in space, isn't going to exactly get over the gain line.
Yeah.
And then in the pack, granted, people like Vunipola back might make a difference. But I think Scotland should be confident of actually winning this game.
All right, Alan, come on, be negative. This is what you do.
I'm not that positive. I still think you've got to remember that England literally got to the World Cup final and destroy New Zealand.
Yes.
I think there's been an amazing sort of... That was only two games ago for England, and now everyone's like, Eddie Jones is the worst coach ever.
Yeah, totally.
It's... and I think... I don't know. It sounds like... I can imagine, you know, post-World Cup and then having to get back into the season and kind of get, you know, emotionally get back up for the Six Nations is pretty tough. I think Scotland got a chance. I'm relatively optimistic. I think... We're definitely not favourites, but I think if we can perform how we did this last weekend, we put ourselves in a pretty good position.
Cut the penalty count.
And also, it was an interesting point that, you know, England are away in France and got a 6-day turnaround for another away game.
Yes.
Yeah.
Which is actually pretty savage.
Tu Langia injured as well.
Yeah. Right.
It's pretty tough. I mean, Eddie Jones has mentioned in his pre-match sort of stuff they might have to tactically change what they do. Do you think they could shift Farrell to 10, or do you think they'll stick with the forward Farrell axis?
I think if they had Slade, maybe, but they don't have Slade.
Yeah.
And then you're looking at midfield of what? Farrell, Devoto, and Joseph.
Yeah.
Fine.
Yeah.
That's not that
good.
Yeah. And I don't think that... I think Farrell as a playmaker is not good enough to get the best out of Joseph or Devoto, personally.
Yeah.
He could probably manage a game better from 10 than he can from 12. I actually think they'll stick with 10, 12, and 13.
Yeah.
I think they're pretty much the same team, except Vunipola will come in.
And then do you think they'll keep May Furbank daily?
Well, because Watson's injured, I don't really see what their other options are.
Yeah.
And I wouldn't mind if they
bring in Ollie Thorley.
If they put Daly at fullback. Daly's not a fullback. I think he's his defense and his high ball work is bristle. He's great in attack.
Yeah.
And then Ollie Thorley on his debut in like a hostile Calcutta Cup match. I'm not fussed by that, personally.
Get that marching music on.
Well, I was going to say, if anyone does have
an extra pillar in the away team.
If anyone does have band practice this weekend, I suggest Friday night outside the England team hotel.
Damn right.
If Eddie wants niggles, let's just niggle. Look, if they're expecting it.
Yeah. But I think there are some, Johnny Barker was talking about it in his column, like some easy enough work-ons from the week before. Like,
yep.
Don't give away stupid penalties. And I think that Scotland were guilty of giving away quite a few.
Agreed. It's
just an absolute killer. Because I think, looking at that England team, you can almost let them have a ball. It depends on what happens, but you can almost let them have the ball and not be too fast and sort of back your defence.
Particularly if our defensive shape sticks and performs as well as it did against Ireland. But they do have, I mean, X-factor players. I think Johnny May conjured two things out of absolutely nowhere to sort of drag England back into the game at the weekend.
Sure.
Like, he's very X-factor. But I suppose we've got a couple of those ourselves. So it's...
Yeah, and I think that if we can replicate the attack that we showed in that first sort of 10 minutes, you know, in more stages throughout the game, then I think we've got enough to cause England problems.
All right.
And so, maybe, you know, the last time we played them, obviously, was the momentum, you think about it, was that second half. Maybe that gives Scotland players confidence and plays in the mind of the English players slightly.
Absolutely, yeah. Give me a prediction then. Saturday night. Are you going to be in Fingers Piano Bar on the piano, tops off, singing Caledonia?
Well, quite possibly, because I think Scotland are going to win by five.
Oh, yes. Scotland by five.
Yep.
Murrayfield, standing order, Fingers, Barnaps, home.
How good would that be?
What an afternoon. Alan, how are you feeling?
I think England will win by... 7.
So it's like a solid England win.
Yeah, I think it'd be something like, I think it'd be a couple of tries, 23-16 to England.
I could see that.
I think it'll be equally relatively close to halftime, and then I just think England will just get that little bit, a few Farrell penalties, they'll just get a little bit in front. Similar sort of setup where for the last 10-15 minutes, Scotland kind of have chances and just aren't able to convert.
All right.
I can't wait for Adam Hastings to pluck an intercept off of Owen Farrell. I lose my mind.
I love it.
I think that's going to happen. I think finally Owen Farrell's chickens are going to come home to roost and he's going to get done for a swinging arm.
Man, he got a red.
He has been owed at least a yellow for so long.
Farrell's going to get done for swimming arm, but then Jamie Rich is going to come in and just fucking tan him in the face and get red carded.
That is true. An awful lot of interest around who's going to start the fight pre-match now that Ryan Wilson's not involved.
Who's your money on?
I think Richie, after his performance against Japan in the World Cup, he's got that niggle in him. Like, he loves that.
Richie and Xander.
But then I think Rory Sutherland, the enforcer, just coming in. I don't think he'll start it.
I think Johnson's actually quite hard as well.
Yeah.
I think he's like a bit of an Aussie bogan.
Yeah, he's like North Queensland Aussie bogan.
Exactly.
100%.
Exactly.
They're hard as fuck.
After the match, he just sinks a pint of Bundaberg rum. It's just like,
But you're right. Like, people like Sutherland, Johnson, I even put Brown in this. Like, they will get stuck in, but they're not going to like give chat, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
Whereas I think Xander and Richie, they'll give a bit of chat.
Yeah.
Up front. Price will give chat and then just like, you know, like getting a homer going into the, the bush.
What do you think, Dave? What's your prediction?
I think it's going to be extremely close. One score either way. And since we are from Scotland, I think Scotland are going to win. It just feels that, as I said in the group chat, I was like, all the stars are aligning for Scotland, which means we'll lose by like 15 points with a really like awful performance. Because do you remember, I think I haven't felt this confident in front of Calcutta Cup since, I think it was Stuart Lancaster's first game as England coach. And it was like Charlie Hodgson was starting at 10.
It was Charlie Hodgson, Farrell,
and it was such
Brad
a
Barrett in the midfield.
It was such a bad England team.
How can we lose this
And
team?
We would have won it, but Hodgson charged down Dan Parks.
And then Parks retired from international rugby afterwards.
It was brutal.
That's savage.
It was absolutely brutal. But I haven't felt like that things have stacked up in Scotland's favour like this since then. But I often think that when things go Scotland's way, we then find a way of losing. Whereas when everyone's like, Scotland are absolutely pumped. Look at 2000. Like
Even last weekend.
Like,
we thought we were going to ship like 30, 40.
Yeah. I think Scotland find a way when they are the underdogs. But I do think that certainly in the last few years, Scotland players get more up for the Calcutta Cup than they do for any other game. And I think if they can add that to what they did against Ireland, Scotland by 3 points.
Like it.
We didn't release, and I don't think we should until next week now, the our SOU news.
Are we doing another tease for the...
I think it's worth doing at the start of the episode.
Right? Yeah, we need to keep doing that.
Next
okay.
week, yeah. We'll release the SOU tease next week.
The SOU tease, and it is good.
It is good chat.
So you'll have to come back then. We will see you next week.
One question quiz.
All right,
you should know. How many days since England last beat Scotland?
It's like 1,065?
It's only 1,006.
It's 1,062.
Oh.
Very good.
We're going to add another year onto that this weekend.
I can't wait.
Here we go. We'll see you next week. Peace.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.